poquito de lunes a jueves. You
the safari park. You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry!
Larry, get into bed now!
Come on, Larry! Larry! Larry!
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? I think not. Well, listen to this. Well, that music could mean only one thing. It's Oscar time. Again? Already? God. You know, somebody said once that everyone has two businesses, his own and show business. And it's so true, isn't it? Why the hell is that? Why don't we pretend to know something or even have an opinion about architecture or medicine or accounting or aerospace? But everybody's an expert on show business, especially movies. And now, it's the 89th Academy Awards show. And for the last couple of decades, those ratings have been on a precipitous slide downhill. And who gives a shit? Do you care? Maybe, maybe not. I bet ABC TV cares. A lot. And the movie studios, they care too. But why has this show been tanking for years? They change up hosts, producers, but nothing seems to help. Well, here's two possibilities. One, most movies suck. So who cares who wins what? Two, actors. They're more annoying than ever, aren't they? Could those be the problems, you think? Maybe? You know, there's only one, and I mean one, truly great actor. The greatest actor who ever lived. An actor who never broke character for 30 years. 30. This guy was so good, De Niro should return every one of his 7 Oscars with a note saying, "I am not worthy." I'll tell you about that actor a little later in the show. So where do we begin? Shitty movies or annoying actors? Well, let's start with the movies and why they suck. It all starts with a script. Actually, that's not correct. There's a fun documentary I watched on a recent plane flight. It's called Steve McQueen, The Man and Le Mans, or as I like to say it, Le Mans. See, studio execs are just as prone to being starstruck as teenage girls, except their boy crushes can cost many millions. In the late 60s, Steve McQueen was the undisputed box office king. He'd starred in several flicks that made a ton of money, and Hollywood just forgot that he was human. He was a good actor and maybe an even better driver. The guy entered the Sebring race with virtually no professional racing experience and finished second by only 23 seconds to Mario Andretti. Not too shabby. So Steve let it be known that he wanted to make a racing movie to star and direct. And the studio basically wrote him a blank check. "Anything you want, Steve, you're the man." He goes to France, has an entire town built, and shoots racing footage for months on end. When he's not shooting footage, he's drinking, driving, banging starlets, and having a hell of a time. He hit a few speed bumps along the way. One of his drivers lost a leg in a horrible wreck. And after a while, the studio calls and says, "Hey, Steve, how's it going over there? Almost finished." And Steve said, and the studio's like, "Is there a problem, Steve? Not that there could ever be a problem with you, because Steve, baby, you're the man, you're Steve." But there was a slight problem. When Steve left for France with several plane loads of race cars and babage and 27 cameras and gear and stylists and bags and bags and bags of the studio's money, he forgot to bring the script because, well, one had never been written. Steve figured he could just wing it because he was Steve and everybody knows he was the man. Then the studio said, "Wait a minute, you are the man, Steve, but movies are about the money." And they very quickly shut off the money and released a racing movie that never got out of first gear. on film or at the box office. That story has been replicated many times since then. They just never learn. Why did that happen? Because he was Steve. And when you're Steve, or any Hollywood superstar, after a few months of sycophantic agents and managers and studio execs and politicians and fanboys and girls elbowing one another out of the way so they can kiss your ass and tell you you are God, you probably start to believe it. A script is a blueprint for a movie, right? Imagine the city of New York wanted to build a new bridge, some massive project that would cost billions. And all kinds of architectural firms would submit plans and blueprints. And imagine the city of New York took all those submissions and had them screened and reviewed, not by qualified architects, but instead hairdressers or accountants or short order cooks. What kind of a bridge would New York wind up with? Well, that's exactly the way Hollywood does it. The most important link in the movie-making chain is the script. And the vast majority of the people at studios and agencies have zero qualifications to judge one. It's a fact. Where do they all start? In the mailroom. Here, kid, can you push this mail cart? Can you read an address? Great! You're now a script reader. Let me know if you find anything good. And the situation is worse than ever, because of the computer. Once upon a time, before scriptwriting software, many people scratched them out in longhand, and then typed them, draft after draft. It took a lot of time and effort just to get everything in the right format. Now, any monkey can bang out 100 pages, and it looks pretty damn professional, until you read it. So producers are drowning in screenplays, mostly written by people so inept they should have someone ghostwrite their shopping list. But everyone is a writer, are they not? People who have never, ever been paid dime one for their writing call themselves writers because, well, their writing was technically published on their own blog or their buddy's blog. Then the minuscule number of screenplays that do get purchased are immediately beset upon by the producer's pet writers for rewrite after rewrite and punch-up and polish until they still suck. The people who really have to know what they're doing, the cinematographers and gaffers and stunt people and sound mixers and visual effects guys and production managers and grips and prop masters, these people cannot bullshit their way through a job. They get little or no recognition. And nobody ever wants to take a whack at their jobs because, well, they just don't have that glamour quotient, do they? But everyone thinks that because they can type, they can write. Or because they can read, they can discern good writing. So the odds of a movie getting made with at least a good story as a foundation are very slim. And then the system proceeds to fuck it up from there. One of the greatest screenwriters ever is William Goldman. And about Hollywood, he said, quote, "Nobody knows nothing," unquote. And that's pretty true. Because anybody can break into Hollywood and become enormously successful, for the most illogical of reasons. John Peters was a hugely successful producer and ultimately ran Sony Pictures with his buddy Peter Goober. What was John's way in? He was a hairdresser that became Barbra Streisand's boyfriend. It's like no other industry, where people have to maybe get a degree or apprentice. No. In fact, lots of TV writers get high-paying gigs because they have a good Coke connection. So the odds of a good movie getting made are truly astronomical. And now the studios live and die by the international box office. So they often opt for stories that have a global appeal, which usually means light on story and heavy on stunts and car crashes and effects, because the nuances of stories often hinge on more localized themes and idioms, ergo Transformers, Rogue One, Pirates, and so on. And while the Oscar ratings have steadily declined, the box office for theatricals sort of seesaw up and down with very slow growth. In 1986, domestic box office was under $4 billion. Last year, it was a little over $11 billion. Over 30 years, that's glacial. Just compare it to, say, real estate. So clearly, movies are in trouble. But they always have been. Because they've been at it for over a century, and they still haven't figured out how to consistently make hits. Most movies bomb. Imagine any other business running that way. Imagine a restaurant serving dog shit 6 nights a week, hoping that on the 7th night, some blind oil sheik with no taste buds might come in and throw a party for a few hundred of his closest blind friends who also have no taste buds. That's the Hollywood business model. No wonder they're all on Zoloft. Damned little originality or creativity ever shows up on the screen. The real creativity is in the back office, where accountants can prove that even movies that make billions never turned a profit. That way they can screw actors and investors out of their participation points. Really, Hollywood accountants' names should be the ones up there in lights instead of the stars. They are the true creative geniuses. There are nuclear subs constantly circling the planet in case shit hits the fan and we have to nuke somebody. Did you know there are also studio execs circling the planet in search of rich idiots? It costs a shit ton to make a big movie, and rule number one in Hollywood is other people's money. And so these studio guys are like vampires looking for wallets to sink their fangs into, and there's always another sucker. Often they're in Europe. For a while, Germany was Hollywood's piggy bank, then hedge fund managers, and now China is the new financier, although they may just buy Hollywood outright. Everybody wants to be in show business, even guys that are already sick rich in other industries, right? Paul Allen, the Microsoft co-founder, billionaire. He's dropped enormous sums in the movie business. And entire corporations purchased studios. Coca-Cola and Sony bought Columbia. Matsushita and Seagram's both bought Universal. Fox was bought by Rupert Murdoch, and so on. Usually they take a financial bath, get their asses handed to them. Why do they do that? My guess is two reasons. First, guys making soft drinks or booze have a business formula, and it works. And they look at Hollywood and they think, look at those assholes, driving around all day in convertibles with their shirts open and doing starlets and nose candy. What the fuck do they know? I can do better. And when they get to town, the first question out of their mouths is, what's your creative process? Ha ha ha! There ain't no process, Mr. Coca-Cola, and if you think there is, you don't know Jack. There's nothing creative about making soda or booze. They are commodities, period. I once wrote for a famous morning radio guy in New York. He was getting older, as was his audience, and they brought me in to write comedy and sort of young things up. My contract actually said to write ad libs. Let that sink in, huh? So I would sit in the studio with this guy and his sidekick, and I had a legal pad and a Sharpie, and I'd come up with a joke or a quip or retort and scribble it on the pad and hold it up to the guy. He'd read it, and everyone thought he was hysterical. And I would also produce a few pre-recorded comedy bits each week. Well, the shtick took off, the ratings spiked, and everyone was happy. Then, as is often the case, management figured more is better. And one morning, I'm introduced to some goofball who claimed to be a stand-up comic and also happened to be the station manager's nephew. I'm told I'm going to be working with him, that he's a fantastic writer. He looks at me and he says, so, where do you get your ideas? I answered him, if they don't come out of my head, they're not really ideas, are they? He looked back at me and blinked his eyes, trying to process. Creativity is not a process, but people who aren't think it is. They think they can mechanize it, build some kind of assembly line, and crank it out like soda pop or breakfast cereal. Which is why network television is such unwatchable shit. And which is why big, successful, eternally profitable companies like Coca-Cola or Seagram's foolishly buy movie studios. The other reason is, the suits think owning a movie studio will give them access to starlets and babage. No doubt it does. And then there's that weird but powerful and undeniable glamour factor. Bill Gates is worth more than every actor and every movie studio combined. But does anybody want his autograph or a picture with him? So now that we've solved the shitty movie riddle, how about those annoying actors, Why are so many of them so annoying? Maybe it's insecurity. When the squads of ass-kissers and lick-spittles punch out for the day, and the thespians are finally home in their mansions, truth comes whispering inside their heads with a stone fact about their profession. Not only can anybody do it, everybody does do it, which renders their profession not much of a profession. When we get stopped by a cop, we start acting. If we go to court, we act. Job interview, an act. Business meeting, act. Sales call, act. We're all actors, aren't we? Movie stars' achievement is really 95% luck and perseverance and about 5% skill. And that bugs them. In no small way, their success is counterfeit. When it gets really tedious, they get a stand-in. When it gets dangerous, they call a stuntman. Look how often actors want to be rock stars. It rarely works the other way around. There's a couple of reasons. Rock stars are eternal. No matter how old they get or look, the fans don't give a shit. Case in point, Keith Richards, or Willie Nelson, or Eric Clapton, and so on. It just doesn't work the other way. A few years ago, I saw Willie live at a nearby club. Though not technically a rock star, Willie certainly enjoys rock star status. At the end of the show, a crowd of girls, young and pointy girls, leaped up on stage, pulled up their shirts, and handed Willie ink markers so he could sign their young, firm, pointy boobs. He was close to 80 at the time and looked every minute of it. And I thought, holy shit, if Willie Nelson was just some ordinary geezer in the supermarket and even looked at their tits, they'd call the cops. Actors just don't have the same longevity as rock stars or legitimacy because Willie Nelson can do things like most musicians, other than some auto-tuned fake divas, things that most people simply cannot. Willie's a pretty damn good guitar player with his distinctive style. He's written some hit songs. His voice is utterly unique. I once met Willie, and he struck me as a very genuine, very nice guy. Willie is an accomplished musician and performer. He doesn't have to prove anything. If you look closely at asshole behavior, it's almost always rooted in some insecure person trying to prove something. So on Oscar night, here are star actors making more in a year or even on one movie than most people could hope to earn in many lifetimes. And they stand there in Armani gowns or tuxes with their awareness ribbons. It's really childish. It's like a kid wearing Mickey Mouse ears or a cowboy costume. Nobody gives a shit but them. Acting performances are utterly subjective, whereas if a musician hits a clinker, everyone can hear it. If a comedian isn't funny, nobody laughs. An athlete either makes the shot or the hit or the catch, or they don't. A plumber either stops a leak or not. There's zero bullshit. Acting is all bullshit. But the stars don't seem to realize that, because they behave like bigger assholes than ever, don't they? They think we care about them, and I suppose some people do. But it's hard to understand. Why would anyone care about someone they've never met, who is completely narcissistic and makes sick amounts of money doing bullshit work that lots of people could do? Last year, the highest paid actor in Hollywood was Dwayne The Rock Johnson at $65 million, followed by Jackie Chan and Matt Damon at $55 million. The top 10 stars' combined income in 2016 was $472 million. Think about that. Nearly $500 million income for 8 guys and 2 chicks. Oh, the other guys were Cruz, Depp, Affleck, Diesel, and some Bollywood dude named Shah Khan. The women were Jennifer Lawrence and Melissa McCarthy. McCarthy and Lawrence only made $46 million and $33 million. Well, so much for equal pay for equal work, huh? Guess they got crushed by that glass ceiling. Boo fucking who. Every industry has its professional gatherings, right? Nights when industry players dress up and go to a ballroom and eat prime rib and hand out prizes and accolades. The official name of the Oscars is the AMPAS, Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Why don't they do a yearly special for the ASCRSs? That would be the American Society of Colon and Rectal Surgeons, proctologists. I can see it now. Gold statuettes in the shape of a sphincter. We'll call them the Proscars. With categories like most anal fissures repaired in a single procedure, best achievement in hemorrhoids. There'd be plenty of camera work in that field. How about best achievement in colonoscopy? Best Muzak in the examining room. Snappiest scrubs. Most original shaped polyp. Best adaptation of an asshole. Hollywood stars are among the luckiest people anywhere. They have easier lives than most because people just want to be their friend, even though so many are creeps. Before I came to Hollywood, I saw a similar public reaction in New York to wise guys. Some were stars in their own right. The biggest of which, of course, was John Gotti. People wanted to kiss Gotti's ass, mostly because they were terrified of him. And it was John's love for the spotlight that ultimately was his undoing. Unlike the guy who once tried to have him killed, the man I alluded to at the top of the show, the greatest actor who ever lived. He was an actor's actor. He never made a movie, never had a SAG card, never took an acting lesson, and never won an Oscar or any award. But damn well should have. Who was he? Vincent the Chin Gigante. I never met him, but I did once see him shuffling down the street in his bathrobe, pajamas, and furry slippers like some schizo bobblehead in an earthquake. Vincent the Chin Gigante. He was a mobster. He headed up the Genovese crew for years, and some said he was the real godfather, that the others were just frontmen, stooges he appointed to draw the heat away from him. He'd been a pro boxer, a leg breaker, and a button man. The guy was nobody to fuck with. The feds wanted the Chin in the worst way. By the way, he did have something of a Jay Leno jaw, but he got the nickname from his mom, who always called him Vincenzo and put a hard accent on that middle syllable. The Chin was amazing. He beat rap after rap. When he was in mid-career, he flashed on a way to stay out of court and jail indefinitely. He'd act crazy, and so he did. Long walks through the neighborhood in his bedclothes, mumbling to himself like a meth head on a 2-week jag, always accompanied by his two caregivers, who were ready to give a dose of hot lead to anyone who cared to mess with the Chin. Vincenzo provided top-shelf shrinks to the court and DAs who testified that he was crazy as a shithouse rat. When that didn't go down well, the feds said, "Fuck you, Chin. We'll get our own shrinks. Let's see what they have to say about your phony act." And so the feds brought in very pricey, very well-credentialed, and credible psychiatrists from Harvard, Columbia, Cornell, NYU, and more. And every one of them declared the Chin not competent to stand trial. One Oscar night, I was at Tony Spumante's. The show was on TV while the girls were getting ready to step out with us. Tony looked at some winner clutching his new Oscar. He sparked a cool. "Look at that fucking asshole. He thinks he can act. He should take lessons from the Chin. I should do some kind of write-in vote to those Hollywood guys about Vinny. Look what he's doing to the feds. Vinny's got him so pissed off they don't know whether to shit or go blind. Maron, maybe I should take some acting lessons in case shit goes sideways. What do you think, Larry?" I never asked Tony if he knew the Chin. It was better that way. If I was ever subpoenaed, I wouldn't have to lie. Vincent the Chin Gigante ran the Genovese crew for years, and they say he became boss of bosses. They called him the Odd Father, the Enigma in a robe, and he confounded the mighty U.S. government for 3 decades with his utterly flawless acting. So De Niro, eat your heart out, you fucking amateur. Of course, not all actors are assholes. The truly cool ones really are secure. They have a sense of humility and acknowledge that they hit the genetic jackpot with their looks and are plying a trade that's as meaningless and unnecessary as one could possibly be. Those ones recognize that fact and just thank a few people, take their Oscar, and get the fuck off that stage. Unlike the terrified, whiny bitches and bitch boys who think their political rants or their pet charities or their suffering for their so-called craft means anything to anybody. Nobody gives a shit. Alfred Hitchcock had a great quotation. He said, "When an actor comes to me and wants to discuss his character, I say, it's in the script. If he says, but what's my motivation? I say, your salary." Hey, I gotta run. That could be my agent on the phone. But before I hop, let me say a few final words about the movies. Once in a great while, Hollywood does hit a home run, and when they do, it can really be amazing. Wish they did that more often. They wish that too, I'm sure. A little bit of housekeeping before we say adios. Last week on The Dick Show, my pal Mr. Masterson discovered and extolled the virtues of the skating rink as an ideal spot to meet the ladies, and it is indeed an inspired choice. However, they are not as common as they once were. There may not be one anywhere near you. They also require an investment of the price of admission and some rudimentary ability to skate. I discovered a far, far superior location where men on the prowl can meet ladies with ease and no need for athletic ability, skate rentals, or admissions. They're all over the country, and probably one right near you. This is not hot goss, it's a hot tip. Can you figure it out? I'll give you a hint. Before I became a dad, I would never, ever have set foot in one of these places. Can you guess what it is? Maybe I'll reveal it next episode, or maybe in a bonus episode. Drop us an email at thatlarryshow@gmail.com or a voicemail at 302-71-LARRY. Grab a Patreon subscription for bonus episodes, special rewards, and can't miss locations to meet chicks. And remember, my friends, you are the director, actor, and screenwriter of your own life story. And as such, the only audience that matters is you. So play it your way, not according to anybody else's idea or focus group. That way, you'll wind up starring in a classic instead of a dud. Just be you. You'll never go wrong. Thanks for stopping by, everyone, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. I'll see you next time, and until then, take no shit.
I fearlessly walk into battle with a shine on my boots and my teeth. Never flinch, never blink, never rattle. My blood is like ice underneath. Oh, I'm the reincarnation of Patton, and I've got Hannibal's heart in my chest. God told me I would have rivaled Alexander the Great at his best.
You're a movie.
Quite.
You're a movie.
Yes.
The exception.
That's right.
You're the one of kind. You're a movie.
More of an epic.
Please include me. Send us to the line.
That's right. Very good.
The bullets repel off my metals, and my men are in awe when I speak. All chaos my strategy settles. My mere presence gives strength to